Hey guys, welcome to On Air with Matthew James. I'm of course Matthew James, bringing you season 2, episode 2. Today we're chatting to Skulk Poseidonit. Now you may know him from stumbling across some of his videos on social media. Of course, if you know the words feeling good, feeling positive, then you definitely know who I'm talking about. We're going to be chatting about his wine label, his merch, and his new project with Mad Dogs, as well as some up-and-coming stage performances that he has planned. So let's get chatting to the hilarious Skulk Poseidonit.
I'm in a sound studio.
Okay.
Just for you. You will hear it is the perfect sound in here. Well, it's not actually a sound studio, it's the sauna in my garage. We bought it. My fiance bought a 4-man sauna that's standing in the garage.
That's fancy.
I mean it's second hand. The people that we bought it from, they pimped it. I didn't know you could pimp a sauna, but they had speakers put in,
yeah,
and a car radio with a CD player.
Okay.
And also a little thing that you can see, it's like a very DIY job, but it does the trick. It's a little table. It's a little table that can fold for drinks, and an ashtray. Yeah.
Okay, so you can smoke inside a sauna. That seems a bit hectic.
You can fucking party in the sauna. There's speakers, there's a drinks table, and there's an ashtray.
I mean, that. What else do you need? There's nothing more.
But I only yesterday discovered that actually, because I don't really like saunaing that much, but I've discovered this sauna is like amazing, because yesterday I was supposed to record this video for someone and there was construction at the flat below us, and it was just so flipping loud, and I keep getting 2.5 minutes into the video, and then the whole time I have to stop it because there's just this banging in the background.
Yeah.
And eventually I was like, let me just go try and find a quiet spot. But I mean, we don't have like a house. It's more like an apartment.
Yeah.
And then I came into the garage and I was like, wait, maybe I can do the video in the sauna. And then I did it in the sauna, but I closed the door. It's like super quiet. So now I think I'm going to use it way more now as my personal little, I just want to like get shit done, bring my laptop here. I can use the drinks table. I can put a glass of wine on it.
A skulk's cave.
Yeah, just a little. And it's a 4-man sauna. So it's probably the size of, like smaller than a lift.
Yeah, just a little. So you don't have much space. I mean, you do a lot of video content. So I don't think you need like a sound stage. I think it's more like a sound booth.
It's a little sound, like a very small sound booth. I wish you could see how cool it is. It's proper like wood inside. It looks like we're in fucking Austria, just finished skiing. Yeah, it's lekker. But anyway, sorry, we're already 3 minutes in. We haven't started the podcast. My point is just, I'm in a sauna, but it's not on. But I'm in a sauna.
Let's get started then while you're inside your sauna. For those who don't know, and I think there are very few of them out there at the moment, who exactly is Skulk Poseidonit? I mean, if you log on to Facebook, you're there. But for those people who don't have Facebook or Instagram, who are you?
I am first and foremost a sauna owner. And
very important.
Father to Otis the dog.
Yes.
Fiance to Mika McKechnie. But if I normally, when I say what I do, I hate those people. No, sorry, hate is a strong word. You sometimes get these, because obviously as performers, especially in South Africa, we do like everything, you know. Like I can't sing, but, you know, a lot of people like sing, dance, act, they do comedy. And it's like, and then also as part of the job, like if you're a comedian, you are automatically an MC as well, because some, you know, if like for a corporate function, people book you as an MC, and you also automatically a presenter, because you might present a show on a TV channel And so I just normally say comedian and actor. I'm a comedian and I'm an actor. But the only reason I say actor, if I didn't have an acting degree, I would just say comedian, because under like most comedians can also act. But I didn't get a fucking honors from UCT for 5 years to not say I'm an actor. So comedian and actor. But you get those people, if you go onto their Instagram bio, they list like every single type of thing that links to performance they've ever done. Like it would be like comedian, actor, singer, dancer, MC, presenter, model. And it's like, just say performer, just say performer.
Exactly. But you are involved in quite a number of things. I mean, you do a wine label, you're now coming out with the Mad Dogs line, you do t-shirts already, stage performance. Explain to us some of those projects, like the wine. I mean, you just said now you can pour yourself a lovely glass of wine in your sauna. Where did your inspiration for the wine label come from?
The wine thing happened purely. It was really fate. It was fate because I've really wanted my own wine for a while. Only at university I really like developed a kind of love for wine. But we were students, so it was like Duiswein and stuff. But I still love actually like a Duiswein because last night I had a show and someone got me the wine, and they bought it like in a carafe with a wine glass. And at my first sip, I was like, this is nice wine. Like, wow. And when I went to the bar later and I was like, can you just top up my glass with whatever wine you gave this guy earlier to give to me? And he takes out this like big box of Duiswein and starts pouring. I'm like, damn, what's that?
It's some fancy wine,
Yeah,
but box
so
wines are very palatable. I mean, they're very much produced for the masses, so they are like very friendly on the taste. They aren't those ones like with those deep notes or those tannins. They're really quite like a general taste that the general public would like, right?
yeah, I mean, I always say to people, I'm a wine lover. I'm not a wine knower. Like I love wine. I don't know wine. If you put a red wine in front of me, I probably wouldn't be able to tell you if it's a Pinotage or Merlot or a Cab Sav or Shiraz. I can tell you I like it or I don't like it. So with my wine, that was just like my biggest thing to the winemaker. I was like, I just want to make a wine that I think is delicious. Because then, if I put it on Instagram or whatever, I'm really selling a product that I think it's good. You know what I mean? So what had happened was the winemaker, they called Infinity Wines. They then in the Cape. I always forget whether they're in Paarl or Wellington, but one of the two. And they sent me a box of their wine. It's like very small boutique wines. You can only pretty much find it online. You won't find it in a Tops or something. And I drank these six bottles. It was still in hard lockdown.
Lockdown.
No, I'm lying. It wasn't. Yeah, it was in level four, which was it was just hard lockdown. And like in a block of flats, you start sort of the whole block eventually becomes like the place you lock down. Like you go visit your neighbors and whatever because they're just a flat next door. And I went to the neighbors and I was like, hey, because they didn't have wine left, so I was like, I got these six bottles of wine. Come, let's drink them. And I phoned the winemaker the next day, or just the whatever the flipping number that was on their website. And I just said, listen, I don't know who you guys are. I just wanted to personally phone you, thank you for the wine, and say that you've got a fan for life. I'll support and buy your wine for life. It's delicious. It's like some of the best wine I've had. And then it was the winemaker's wife who I was speaking to, Anya, and then we just started chatting, and they said they make the wine for like these people I know, and I was like, oh, you guys make wine. I was kind of saying, yeah, I've always wanted my own wine, but I've never known where to start. Like, how do you even approach like a Beyers Kloof or Spier, like these massive,
Yeah.
massive. And she's like, Wynand will call you. He's my husband. He's the winemaker. He'll call you in an hour. I said his name is not Wynand.
How fitting.
Yeah, and he called me, and geez, I mean, the ball started rolling like immediately, and like 2 weeks later, they send me designs, and then as soon as level three opened, they started he se started sending me wine, like unmarked bottles through Postnet, and I would taste it, and I would literally just send him voice notes back. It was probably very articulate, I mean, very frustrating for him, because I couldn't like articulate really in his terms what I was trying to say. So I'm trying to like describe what I want and whatever. And eventually he just said, listen, Skulk, just tell me which wines you like, and I'll try and, kind of make it in that sort of. And I gave him, I think, a list of like three or four wines that I love. And he's like, I think I know what you want. And then he sent me another batch, and then that was perfect.
And and then you started marketing it through Instagram, and that's just sort of how it took off, yeah?
Yeah.
That's amazing. And then you did the thing with, or you're doing the thing with Mad Dogs as well now.
Yeah, Mad Dogs, this has been like a sort of long time coming, they did disappear for a while, because I think it switched. I'm not sure of the details, but it switched owners and stuff. And I think in that period there was this, they were in this limbo period. But they contacted me and said we must do something together, and I can be involved in the design process. And I said there's nothing we need to redesign. We just need to bring back the what it was originally in the 90s.
And
'Cause
it
now,
was iconic. Everyone who saw that was like, what childhood memories?
I mean, it was pretty simple. We're only doing a very limited edition, like 100 of the white outfit and 100 of the blue outfit, and that's it. And if it goes well, we might do some more stuff together in the future. But yeah, it's hard for me, because when I've got projects like that, the wine and Mad Dogs and stuff, I probably overthink it, but I don't like to sort of post about it that much, because I feel like, people follow me for comedy and for those reasons, and now you're just pushing product. And I always feel like your art should be like, if you like it will happen naturally that any artist will eventually have things they sell, like whether it's a merch store. I mean, like every comedian that has some sort of merchandise or something,
Merch, like a t-shirt or something,
or something they're involved in. But that should be secondary to your art. And what you sometimes do see is that people get so caught up in their merch that that becomes almost their primary thing. Like, they like just pushing the t-shirts or whatever. And then eventually you're like, yo, are you a t-shirt maker or are you a comedian? Like, what? Because I haven't seen you post about comedy in weeks, but every day you're posting about t-shirts. So at the end of the day, like, these are all kind of nice side hustles and nice to haves, but at the end of the day, I'm not a winemaker, I'm not a fashion designer, I'm a comedian. So these are all secondary to what I do. Like, if things, had to in the future calm down a bit on the comedy side, I would like to kind of pursue the wine thing, not on a full-time basis, but like go to Cape Town, go with the winemaker, go drink wine with restaurants and stuff, and try and get them to stock it and whatever. But I'm never gonna let comedy take a back seat to go pursue those things. It will always have to be, those things have to take a back
Second.
seat to comedy,
And that's, yeah, and you see that, you see it on your social media as well, because I mean, I follow you on Instagram and Facebook, and every time I log on every day, you have a new video that's purely just your craft and comedy and funny. and something that just makes you laugh and remember that you are a comedian. And then now and again, I would see the announcement for Mad Dogs or The Wine. But your videos on Facebook, though, you started doing the lockdown level counting and day counting.
Yeah.
Was that just something that you decided, like, okay, today we're going to diary my day one of this? How did you come about coming up with that content?
I think it started, yeah, like it feels so long ago, eh? But if I remember correctly, I made a video a few days before lockdown, because I went to Cape Town for shows.
Mm.
And I climbed on the plane because it was the day after Cyril's speech. So I was still a bit in denial, like, no, we'll do the shows at like a smaller capacity. Or he said you should cap it at 100, no more than 100 people.
Mm.
So I was like, no, we'll do the shows and cap it at 100 and whatever. And as I got on the plane, that he spoke on the Sunday, as I got on the plane that Monday morning, I was still doing the shows. By the time I landed, I was not doing the shows anymore. I'd made the decision not to. When we landed, I called my manager and I said, cancel all the shows. The venues must refund everyone. And I was just like, yeah, I'm sorry. And at that stage, it was still a way scarier thing than it is now. Now, there's a 99.9% or whatever it is, survival rate and those kinds of things. But, back then it could have been like...
There wasn't all this information.
Yet. Yeah, it could have been, for all we knew, like the next plague that kills half the world, So, I said, I'm not gonna sit with the guilt of knowing that I contributed to the spread. And but then I was in Cape Town and I had a nice Airbnb booked, so I stayed there. And then in that week, I started self-isolating and stuff and starting to get a bit of cabin fever. And the natural thing was to kind of walk around and think of content. And I started making a video or two, and I started realizing my likes and my views and everything is way bigger, because already in that week, people were encouraged to stay at home, even though there wasn't the law yet. But people were encouraged to stay at home and so on. And I came back to Joburg and I made a video of this elbow greeting thing that we all had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why do the elbow greeting? Because you're still touching. Like, do you think Corona cannot get through a fucking elbow, It's so clever, this virus. It can infect everyone in the world. But we found this loophole. It's too dumb to get through an elbow. Because in March it was also still hot, so it was skin on skin, And I was like, if you're really scared of Corona, then just wave,
or just don't touch anyone.
Why
do you have to
wave? Do a thumbs up, whatever. And then that video also, I was so surprised by the, and then I just realized, well, look, for the hard lockdown, people are going to be on their phones. Mm. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And then I challenged myself to do a video every day of lockdown. And I mean, it was quite easy at the time, because there was just so much to speak about and everything was quite short lived. Like the themes, level five and the whole, let's say, for example, banana bread. If you make a joke about it now, it's kind of like, yeah, okay, cool, but it was so long ago, so I was like, I might as well burn this material, because normally if I think of some really great material, I'm like, why? I don't want to put it on Instagram and kind of almost in a sense waste it,
and not have it in
I'd rather keep it for my live show. But with the lockdown stuff, I was like, I don't mind burning this, because I'm not going to be in 2021 on stage talking about how we baked banana bread and how everyone was doing cock to their hair and whatever. So, and exercising, on their balconies. And I was like, no one is going to want to hear about that anyway. When Corona's done, people want to move forward. People want to don't be reminded about, remember this, remember that. So, and I mean, in a weird way, Corona, look, I think that is one thing of the pandemic. Like, certain people did benefit from it, and you can't deny that. I mean, if you were the CEO of a hand sanitizer company, you were freaking
Yeah.
praying
Or like after
for level five
that.
to get extended even more. And you know, they are now crying. The more things go back to normal, the
Yeah.
more CEOs of hand sanitizer companies are going, oh no, it's over, you know. But so yeah, I mean, for me, it was hugely beneficial. I mean, I wouldn't have done those videos and, you know, grown my followers like the way I did if it wasn't for lockdown, if it wasn't for Corona. And also the online shows I did, I would never have, if I had the option of doing a live show, decide to do an online show. I would have been like, that does not make sense to me. Why would I ever want to do a show for an audience that I can't see or hear if I can go on a stage and do it? Yes, I had to cancel like a whole tour. I had big plans and blah blah blah, but you know, and a few international gigs as well that I was quite sad to not be able to go do. But yeah, like, but on the other hand, there's also a lot of positive stuff that came from it for me.
And sort of you did you always want to be a comedian? Because you said you were at UCT, you got an honors in acting and all of this. Was this always your plan to be a comedian? Walk us through your journey. Like, where did it all really start for you?
No, the plan was always acting, like your typical childhood dream, like winning the Oscar. That was my thing. Like I would always think about like my shower fantasy, like I always in the shower when people would sing in the shower, I would always think like what would my Oscar speech be, or who am I thanking in my Oscar speech, you know? And then like the biggest disappointment of my life suddenly hit when I didn't get into drama school. At UCT, the first time I auditioned, I did get in the second time eventually. But anyway, the fact of the matter is, then I was there, UCT first year, doing a general BA drama. I didn't get into the practical degree, which is called theatre and performance. That's like the fancy exclusive degree that I wanted to get in. They only take 30 students a year, and it's very hard to get into, and whatever. And I mean, I'm quite time efficient. In school, academically, I was very strong. No one would say it of a comedian, but I always like saying it because I like surprising people. But seven distinctions in matric, got distinctions for all my subjects. And okay, fine, fair enough. Like
Just putting it out there. Just putting it
history and
out there.
LO don't count, so you can say it's the five distinctions. But so anyway, you know, so. In BA is quite a chill degree, and I would always do my. I had this massive FOMO, especially in first year. I just wanted to be at every party. So if we got a project to do or an essay to write, I would literally rush to the res, sit at my laptop and do it and get it done. Because I never wanted to leave it to last minute, because I was always scared that there was going to be this epic party and then I wouldn't be able to go because I had an assignment to do. So I'd always do my work as soon as it came in. I would do it, get it done with. And I ended up just having all this free time on my hands. And obviously, like in school, I was performing a lot because you're doing public speaking and you're in the school play, the Afrikaans one and the English one. And I just wanted to get on stage in some way. And an easy way to get on stage was then at the time stand-up comedy, because you could go to a gig and ask for 5 minute spots and they'll be like, okay, come back next week and you can do 5 minutes. And if you do well, other bookers see you and then say, come do my gig, come do my gig. And then I did eventually get into theater and performance the second time. But by the time I got in, I'd already properly gotten, you know, I'd been doing stand up at that stage for almost a year then. And I'd really gotten my foot in the door, you know, like people in the Cape Town comedy scene knew who I was. I was still an open spot. I was still very much a newbie, but you know, I didn't have trouble sending a WhatsApp and getting a gig, you know, getting 5 minutes here or there. And as the 4 years that I had left progressed, my career grew and grew and grew, and eventually I started realizing, oh wow, when I leave drama school, I'm definitely going to be a stand a full-time comedian that does acting when the opportunity arises and not the other way around. I'm not going to be a full-time actor and doing stand-up when I get the opportunity. And yeah, acting will always be my first love. But I'm really amazed by how it worked out. And as cliche as it sounds, like I really believe that everything happens for a reason. If I did get in that first time when I really wanted to get into drama school, I wouldn't have started stand up.
Yeah, exactly. And do you think that that sort of stand-up career that you did then sort of helped you gain the confidence to get into UCT the second time, or get into the exclusive UCT course the second time?
To an extent, yeah. I think that with getting in the second time, it was actually just I didn't in matric have the guidance. You know, the local Tani who teaches drama in Kempton Park is not really. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I didn't have the guidance I needed.
But were you always as outspoken and hilarious as you are now? Or was it
Outspoken,
like
yes. I don't
when
know
you were growing
always if
up?
I was if my jokes always landed, but yeah, I did like in school I used to do this. I didn't start it. There was this guy, he's actually also in the industry now, he's an actor on Binnenlandish. He started doing this thing in front of the school where he would do like it was in like a news bulletin, and he would kind of tease people in the school. So he would say, who's the newest couples, what's the newest news, like basically the gossip, you know. And he would poke fun at the teachers, and he was 2 or 3 years older than me. So then when he left school, he kind of handed that morning thing over to me. So once a month I'd go in front of the whole school, you know, and I'd ask for 10 minutes at soul whipping, what do you call it in English, like assembly,
Assembly.
and I'd go and do my little skit, you know. And so that was sort of my big foot in the door of like, you know, performing and writing, like writing original content. It was easier because it was inside jokes, so it's easier to joke with Mrs. Groenewald and just say like, oh, like we all know that she doesn't brush her hair in the morning because everyone knows that she's got the Mekaar hair, you know. So that's it's easy to make like inside jokes. But it was a big transition when I started stand up to now you have to write more universally, obviously, you know. But yeah, so I did in school. Yeah, I was always, and especially in primary school as well, I was like always, because this is also like a cliche and a stereotype, but like it's normally the if you can't get girls by being a rugby player, like can't get girls to like you because you're a sportsman, then you need to find another way. Or if you not just girls, I'm like I'm making it about girls now, but I mean people, you know. If you're good at sports in Afrikaans school, everyone automatically loves you, the teachers, the kids, just because I don't know, because sport's very important in Afrikaans schools. So if you're the first team, if you're in the first team rugby, and this is not,
No
yeah, and this is not the
problems
rule, like this is gonna sound like I'm really fucking tuning rugby players, but like you don't really need a personality there. Because you just, it's enough. It's a, if you score a try, if you score a try against the school's enemy, that is enough. So then you need a, so if you don't have that, which I obviously didn't, you need to find another way to become popular or to kiss girls or whatever,
Game
gain
friends.
friends. So yeah, and humor is normally then you can see it a lot in a lot of schools, you know, kids who normally kind of fly under the radar, and it's mostly like your skinny, scrawny kids, they do end up being the class clown, the entertainer. Yeah, so I was in school, I was like the class clown all the time, yeah.
And like we're talking about the fact that lockdown sort of, you know, at the same way boosted your career in the social media sense, but in the actual physical sense of doing shows and things really affected your career negatively. What sort of career plans did you have for this year that lockdown really affected, and how did you go about, you know, changing and really getting over those challenges?
Well, it was basically just as soon as quickly as possible moving into an online space. And I guess I was also lucky that I got in quickly, because when I started, people were still sort of like figuring it out. And, you know, some people only like really started gaining momentum in the online space when, I don't want to say when it was already too late, but when we got to like level two, you know. And then it's like, well, now people can go to a restaurant, people can go to each other's houses and see their families. Yeah. So there wasn't like a need necessarily for like online content anymore, because people were out and about more. And when you're out and about and you're visiting friends and stuff, you're not on your phone so much. So, so I got in there early, you know, and my online shows as well. And that's also why I think my last online show was the week before level three, because I could sense that level three, when things started opening up a bit more, you're not trapped in your house. And when people were like physically, I mean, in a sense, we were like literally physically trapped in our house. Like
unless you were
on your way to go do grocery shopping, that's it. And like, we were scared, like, because they did check, you know, like they would pull you over and check your permits and stuff, or like, where are you going? So, because people were so trapped in their house, there was like really a demand for online content, an online show, some sort of sense of normality. So like doing a comedy show online, which is like really wonderful to see people tagging me in stories on Instagram of like how they've made it like a little comedy night in their lounge. You know, they switch off the lights, they put it on the big screen, they have got a bottle of wine and snacks and sweets and whatever. So that was that was cool. And now it's great because, you know, so many people discovered me only in the lockdown, because, you know, in a household, yes, maybe there's one person that buys a ticket for the show, because it was like 50 rand a ticket per household, because you only need one link and you all watch on the same device. So it was maybe like Mariki, who's always been a fan of mine, and the rest of the family don't really know me, but now she buys a ticket for the show and she says to the family, okay, I'm going to watch this thing. And it's like, oh, you know, if you put a movie on that you like, that then the family watches with. And now suddenly there's three other people that have never seen you in that household that now suddenly go, oh, okay, cool. And and now, like, now that things open up again, it's not just Mariki who's going to come to the live show. All those people are going to come, because you reached so much people. And also, I guess some people just also, just, I never like got to their sort of place, or you know, because you can't go anywhere everywhere in the country. And sometimes in places like like Porfada, there is only two people who like you there. So, you know, so it was a great way also of like connecting with people, because people could watch from anywhere in the world, you know.
And sort of, do you think it's something that you're going to continue to do? Like, I mean, obviously not as often as you would have had to do it now during lockdown, but do you think that you're going to be seeing more online shows throughout the industry?
In the industry, yes. I can see a lot of people still doing live stream shows. For me, like, I feel like that chapter is now closed and I want to start the live show thing again, which I have, you know, the Christmas Bonanza shows I'm doing. You know, it's live. And the problem with, I think it is easier with music, because obviously it's always that like debate between comedy and music, because if you do a music show, you can, if you do a live online show, you can do the same songs as you're going to do in your live show in a month's time. People will enjoy it again because people want to hear songs that they know. Whereas with stand-up, people complain if they know the joke. Now and then it's like, oh, I know this one. Oh, it's a good one. But normally it's like, if you do shows, people come up to you afterwards, yeah, you did that joke a year ago. So it's way more important with comedy to constantly be churning out new material. And if you do a live online show, it's a big amount of people that get exposed to that material at once with one show. And then that makes it tricky to do that material again in a live show because.
Because you don't know who's seen it, yeah, and where they've seen it, which province has seen it. So, yeah,
Yeah, and
sort of like you can't do that joke again.
I don't want to be doing the Baxter for in Cape Town for 600 people, and 300 of them are sitting there going, "I've heard this. I've heard this.
Yeah,
I've
but we,
heard this."
yeah.
So, but that said, I would like to. What I would like to do is like if I've got a show that I've toured extensively, and I feel now I'm gonna close the book on this show. This is the last time I'm gonna do the show. Then it'll be cool to then do an online show of it just to go, look, I've done the show now. I'm never gonna do it again. Here's an online show for those who missed it. If I didn't come to your town, or maybe you live overseas, you live in Portugal and you couldn't see it. Here it is, one last time. And then I think it's cool to do it online because then you're making it accessible to everyone. But I think I would only want to do that after you're done. I guess it's the same with like comedians when they write a new show, like Dave Chappelle, he'll tour the world doing that show and then record it for Netflix and then it puts it out there. And then as soon as it ends up on Netflix, I mean, then that's the last phase of the show. Then he doesn't do it again because
And
then
also
everyone
that,
sees it there.
because also at that point the viewer can choose for themselves if they want to see it again. If they've seen it live, they can now choose whether or not they want to see it on Netflix. So it's not as if like it's the other way around where they see it on Netflix and now they're like the only option is the only live show option is the one that they've already seen. I think in that sense. Sort of for you, what has 2020 really taught you though?
Feeling good, feeling positive.
That saying, when I hear that, I immediately start laughing and I laugh and start sneezing.
I think I realized the importance of content, just like putting out content. You not that I want to say you can't chill, like obviously everyone you need to chill, but like it's important to constantly be crafting, like there were two options if you were a comedian in the lockdown to be like, cool, I'm going to use this opportunity to chill and to relax, and I've maybe you've got like a reserve of funds that you've saved up over the years and you're like, financially I'm fine, I'm gonna sit, I'm gonna watch Netflix, I'm gonna play PlayStation, and I'm just gonna like have a bit of a break, right? Which is also totally justifiable, whatever. And but then the other option was to like still try and put out content just in a different way. Look, to be honest with you, if I had 10 million followers and I was selling out big runs at big theaters, like if I was selling out the Teatro at Monte Cassino for a month before Corona, I wouldn't have like hustled so hard. I wouldn't have hustled so hard. Just hold on, there's someone. Okay, sorry, someone was just knocking on the sauna. If I was like that level, I wouldn't have hustled so hard and tried to, but yeah. So I'm sure
And also,
Dave
do
Chappelle
you?
was chilling for a lot of the hard lockdown. But it just shows you he is the most famous comedian in the world, and he never stops hustling because as soon as it was possible to do a live show again, he was the first comedian. He did outside shows where it was safe, COVID compliant, people wearing masks, taking temperatures at the door. He was the first one to do it, even though he's the last one to have to do it because
And
he's
that's
got
what
the,
he works that
yeah, he's
hard,
got the fame. So that like, I think that's what COVID taught me. It's just like that, that hustle element, it never stops. It never should stop. You should just
Definitely.
try and adapt to every single thing.
And on that note of never stop hustling, what sort of exciting projects do we have to look forward to from you?
Well,
I mean, we discussed Mad Dogs, we discussed the wine, and we know about Christmas Bonanza. Is there anything else that's waiting?
I think the biggest thing is, and hopefully next year, we'll be able to, as soon as possible, be able to just do 100% capacities and stuff, if it's safe to do so. But speaking of Dave Chappelle, like one thing, and it's not really like a culture we have in South Africa, but I mean, so we will try comedians here to do material, new material, little bits at a time. So you'll ask for 5 minutes at a club gig, and then you'll go on, you'll try some, 5 minutes, and then until you've like kind of perfected those 5 minutes, and then you go from club gig, and you build up your one man show kind of in these little 5 minutes at a time. Whereas in America or in London, obviously you need to build up a bit of a fan base to be able to do it, but they'll do like these new material nights where it's just that comedian and they are testing new material, and they make their tickets like quite cheap or cheaper than normal, because it is a work in progress show, especially in the UK. It's a big thing. Tickets are a bit cheaper, and the audience come with the knowledge that I'm going to see a work in progress. So they it's le less pressure on you, because they're already coming knowing that it's not going to be a
You're
brilliant,
gonna be testing out,
necessarily a brilliant, like polished show. And I've started to,
Just to test out the jokes, and sort of hear the reaction to
yeah,
people talking.
and those comedians, they go on stage like with their notebook and kind of with their notes, but then they kind of write an hour's worth of material and go test it all at once, which is actually a better, for me, I think, a bit better and easier way to do it. And Dave Chappelle the same. I mean, he still goes to the clubs in America, but he will obviously, because he's Dave Chappelle, that he can get an hour slot, and people shut up and listen when he gets on stage. So what is awesome about that is he can go on stage and do an hour at the Comedy Cellar. There's 100 people. It's low pressure, and who knows? Maybe from that hour, people laugh a few times, and he only finds 5 minutes that he likes. But that's the 5 minutes that you'll eventually see on Netflix and go, "Wow, that's one of the best jokes I've ever heard." So what I did after, I'm sorry, long story to get where I want to get is, so when live shows, when they announced 50% capacity thing, I did a week of new material nights. I made my tickets, I think it was 100 rand, where normally it's 150. And I said to people, like, "Look, it's all new material. I don't even know if this cock is funny. Just come, be open-minded. I'm coming, I'm open-minded. Let's do it." It was such a magic, it was such magic shows, because it's like really like you're figuring out the show together, you and the audience. Because they're listening, they want to laugh. You gauging, is this a funny joke or not with them? Sometimes a joke bombs, and you decide as a group, "Okay, that one didn't work," and the audience will go, "Yeah, no, it didn't work." And then you're like, "Okay, it's fine. We're moving on. We're moving on." And
But what do you do when a joke bombs though? Like, what is that feeling like on stage where you think it's such a funny joke and you tell it and it just doesn't land with the audience? Is it like sweat dripping
it
down your
is.
forehead, like
Yeah, it
heart
is
beating
normally
fast?
like that if it is like a club show or a big show. But like I said, because the environment was so experimental, it wasn't like that, because and there also wasn't that fear of a joke not landing, because we all under the understandment, that's not a word, we all understand that some jokes are going to work, some jokes not. But anyway, after that week of new material nights, by the end of it, I had a brand new show, like brand new, almost 2 hour one man show. And I think it's my best one, my funniest one to date. So next year I'll be touring that as extensively as I can, because I'm very proud of that show. I really want as many people as possible to see it. It's called Feeling Good. And yeah, it's just
Of
like a
course.
wonderful show. So I'm going to try and do it in as many places as I can for as many people as I can. And then, yeah, just in general, live shows. And I, like I said at the beginning, like acting will always be my first love. So always when an acting opportunity comes in, I try and make time for it and do it. So yeah.
And so before we let you go off and enjoy your sauna that's not on, what is the sort of what is the advice that you have to any inspiring actors or comedians out there?
Yeah, acting is a bit, acting is more difficult to give advice on because it's a kind of like, because you know it's kind of the it's what it's easier if you did study somewhere because you've already got that little network of people you know. You know, a lot of work that comes from there's a lot of work that comes from a student group because you are creating for exams and stuff, you're creating work with people that you get on with. And then afterwards, people break into, I saw it with Maya at UCT. People break into these little pods. It's like these three people work really well together and then they will go and create theater and whatever. So there's so many variables of that. But with stand up, the best advice I can give a young aspiring comedian, because sometimes you get the odd DM on Instagram that's like, you know, can you give me advice or whatever? And the thing is, everyone has such a different psyche, and what works for me is not necessarily what will work for you. I mean, just writing material. Like, there are comedians that I know that they have to, if they think of a joke, they have to write it out on a piece of paper, word for word, exactly how they're going to see the joke. Other comedians just jot down like rough ideas and then they go explore it on stage. Others don't write down anything. Like, I think, yeah, there's comedians that they don't write down anything. They just, they just,
Just got
they
me
have it
told.
in their head. And as soon as they've done it on stage and it works, they can't forget it. Like, it's burnt into their brains. And some comedians generate material by going on stage and recording their set and then listening back to it the next day and go, okay, tonight I want to change that, and then repeat the process. So I can't tell you what to do because that's what I do, and that's not necessarily going to work for you. But the one thing that I know for sure, and that's the thing that is the only way to get better with stand-up, is stage time. You have to get on stage. You have to get on stage. Like, we can sit here, I can sit here and tell you and give you advice for hours, and all of that will fly out your brain as soon as you get on stage. Like, that is the only place that you learn. Like, in a sense, it's like running. You can't talk about running and expect to become a better athlete. Like, you have to physically feet on the floor, feet moving. You have to go, you have to run. The more you run, the better you get at running, the more fit you get. So, you know, and now I'm finally at a place, you know, next year I'd be doing it for 10 years. So it took me like 10 years to get here, but now I'm at a place where I can go on stage with just notes, you know, on a piece of paper and kind of explore it. Where if I wanted to try a new joke like 8 years ago when I was in my first or second year of comedy, you know, it's like you're practicing it in front of the mirror and you're like trying to figure out every single angle of the joke. Now it's like, no, I've got an idea, I'll go find it on stage. I'll see what happens on stage. But that can only come with hours and
With
hours and
practice.
hours and hours of stage time. And then like a place where, because the more comfortable you're on stage, the more you play. Because eventually it really does become just like, oh, I'm chatting to my friends, you know? So yeah. So stage time, stage time, stage time.
That's definitely how it feels when you do comedy though. It's very like it's like it feels like you've known you for so many years. Like when you do those videos, it's like you're talking to one of your friends. It's really hilarious and really funny. So thank you so much for taking some time out to chat to me
Thank you,
today.
bro. Yeah, thank you.
So we'll definitely see you in Cape Town soon for the Christmas Bonanza show,
Yeah.
and keep an eye out for the Mad Dogs merch coming out, and of course, get a drink of that wine that you're
And feeling
selling.
good next year. We're all feeling
Feeling
good
good,
next year.
feeling, and then feeling good, feeling positive
Every
every day
day.
on Facebook and Instagram. Thank you so much, Skull. We'll
Lekker
chat
bro,
soon.
dankie.
Okay. Okay, thank you guys for tuning in to today's episode. Remember, if you enjoyed it, please subscribe to our Spotify channel and give us a follow on social media at Matthew James SA on Twitter and at Matthew Hallett on Instagram. Again, thank you to my amazing guest, Scott Besednet, and thank you to everyone who's tuned in. I hope to see you back here sometime on Air with Matthew James.